on the one hand, you know, the mind likes to crank out expectations, in case you hadn't noticed. And that would include expectations about, you know, what you're supposed to have received here and how long it'll take and all those kinds of things. But we also have to recognize that it's fine to take have expectations, but to take them seriously as, you know, the truth of the matter is a different thing. That is a setup for failure, and by failure I mean that Mr. Mischief gets to snatch away whatever blessings you received here. So, have you ever noticed? Well, let me ask the question. If you think about it, how often, when you haven't had an expectation about something, how often has it happened that everything worked out exactly as you expected? Good, nobody can remember, because it never happened. Because expectations are a construct of the mind, and, you know, the world is much more complex and mysterious and unpredictable than the mind can deal with. But the payoff of believing in your expectations is, you know, you say, well, you know, I came to healing camp and it's supposed to have provided this and this for me, and within this amount of time, guess what? It ain't going to happen. And then your mind's going to say, see, I told you so. This whole thing is, well, at best, isn't the way it works. Or at worst, you know, it was a ripoff, or, you know, whatever. Or I'm hopeless and nothing will ever work for me, or whatever version it tells. And that way, your mind gets to regain its territory, which it says, I'm the only guy or woman who knows what's going on here. I'm your best friend. Listen to me. And then you're kind of back where you started from. If you think about some of the things we talked about the other night, about heart and balance and whatever healing is about, it's about restoring balance. And the way of the heart is the way to do the balance. The way of the mind is, well, again, like we said the other night, Mr. Mischief has a branch office in between all of our ears. So, the thing to do with expectations is to recognize that they're expectations, and it's a trick. It's a setup. It's a setup to be able to define whatever your experience was here as, you know, a failure, or at least something like that. And so your mind gets to win. But, you know, if you're focused, you know, strongly on your expectations, and they're not fulfilled, which I guarantee you they won't be, the thing is, what you do get might be even better than what you expected to get, but you won't even see it. If your whole focus is on, well, I was expecting this, and my expectations are, you know, that's the truth of the matter, and therefore didn't happen, therefore da 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 da. Meanwhile, you miss out. You won't even see what was provided for you. So the thing to do with your expectations is simply to recognize that they're expectations. And, you know, you don't have to take them seriously. The problem is not the expectations itself, it's like believing in them. But, you know, if you want to go by your past experience, which is that expectations are never fulfilled exactly, and usually not even close, so if you contemplate that, you can begin to take your expectations not very seriously. And that way what you want to do is keep an open mind. You know, whatever is going on here at camp is quite mysterious. And in the face of mystery, the mind tends to get a little nervous because it likes to be able to control and predict everything. Anyway, what you want to do is, you know, in the face of that question, like, what the hell happened here? What was really provided for me here? What will it provide? How long will it take to unfold? Those are really good questions, good, honest questions. So with an open mind, it's like, you keep the questions open. And let your experience reveal the answers. Now, when I say that in the face of something mysterious, our minds tend to get nervous and try to defend themselves. Because as I say, deep down, even the mind realizes that it doesn't really know very much. And therefore it gets nervous and afraid, and it tries to in the face of the mystery that life is, tries to protect itself by trying to control everything, predict everything, fortify itself with logic and reason, and see, where was I going with this? Oh, yes. Another one of its favorite strategies for maintaining its illusion of being this big know-it-all and being in control is it raises doubt, which is a form of fear. So one of the things this means is that when you leave home, I mean, when you leave here and go home, very often if you feel like this has been a beneficial experience for you, very often there's a natural desire to share with others about this. But one of the things you have to keep in mind is that, you know, there still is a very special context here that we've been sharing with each other. And it has to do with, you know, the consecrated fire and all of our experiences and the sacred place and the sharing that we've had and all that. An experience which is in many ways undefinable, but nevertheless present. Now, when you go home, you'll be talking to people who haven't been here, don't have this context. And in most cases, or at least many cases, don't have any kind of similar context for this. Therefore, when you talk about it, their mind will not be able to understand it. And in the face of that lack of understanding, it's going to start defending itself. Because it'll feel threatened. And one of the most common things that happens is it defends itself, again, by raising doubts. Or even cynicism about it. So, that, of course, is not beneficial for the person you've spoken to. Start building up the defensiveness of the mind. You haven't done him any favors. The other thing, though, about doubt is it is infectious. It's contagious. And it can infect you. Sometimes it can be spoken. You know, the person speaks from a place of doubt and perhaps cynicism about this, and particularly if it's a person who you like and respect and all like that, and it's serious doubts in you. So that way, out of a sincere desire to help and share and all like that, you can be doing just the opposite. Therefore, in talking about this, if you want to talk about it, I suggest that you just keep it very, very simple. Like, well, you know, what was that all about? What was that like? I'm not sure. But it was a beautiful place, great food, wonderful people. There were some healing sessions. I don't know what the heck that was about, but feel this way, you can say, but I feel like it was a good thing. You know, something simple like that, and true. But any more than that is more likely to do the opposite of what you're hoping it will. On the other hand, there is a good way to share, and an effective way to share, that will help the person you're speaking to. And that is, it happens spontaneously. Because whatever you experience here is part of you now. And it has changed you in some way. And let's call it a beneficial way. And therefore, when you're just by your presence around others, they'll get a spark of that. They'll get a spark of the fire that you'll be carrying with you. And that's contagious too. But it's a beneficial contagion. So you don't have to worry about not sharing. You will share. Automatically. So another thing still answering your question, I hope you understand. Yes? Well, one of the things I'm sure by now you've all noticed is that the pace of life here in camp compared to the pace of your life back home is very slow, is it not?
Yes.
Very delightfully slow.
Delightfully slow.
It's like a timelessness.
Yes.
Set up.
Yeah, and that is deliberately. We're not didn't bring you here to bore you or something. But it's a very beneficial because speaking about being in connection with nature. Well, nature and the natural world has a certain pace. And compared to the frenetic pace of modern or postmodern, whatever we call this life that we're living now, it's very slow. That's not a disadvantage, though. So, when you go too fast, it's like there's a lot of wheel spinning or skimming along the top, and you're zipping by. And meanwhile, all the wonderful, let's call them, resources of connection to the world as it is, well, you kind of miss out on it. Is there anyone here who feels that the pace of life back home isn't too fast? Okay, you can go now.
I live a very slow life.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. But the other thing is that although the pace of life is very slow, or because the pace of life is very slow, it's not like nothing is happening here. A lot has happened. If you don't realize it now, I guarantee you will when you leave here. So there's an interesting paradox there, that the slower you go, the faster you go. And with more ease. So that's something you can take with you too. Slow down, and you'll see that you won't sacrifice any effectiveness. On the contrary, the media fast is all about slowing down. With that slowing down, with limiting or eliminating exposure to the media, which is all about faster, 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 faster. You know, every year you've got to buy a faster computer. But when that is removed, it's so beautiful to see how quickly people start connecting with each other and those connections deepen. And most of us were strangers to each other, not 4 days ago. There's this little anecdote about this that I like to tell. When I was living in Santa Barbara, well, I was living in a, what's now become quite a typical neighborhood for the United States, and that is, I can honestly say that I didn't even know so much as the name of any of my neighbors, any of them. You didn't see anybody on the streets almost ever. Even the kids weren't out playing with each other, you know. I guess if they wanted to get the kids together, they made a play date. Well, a week from Thursday, you know, get in your car and bring the kids over to my place. And, you know. But it's like, you know, no human contact with the people we were living with. A very isolated way to live. Anyway, one day we had a power outage. And all the TVs went off, and all the televisions conked out, and radios and everything. And within minutes, people were on the street. They brought out card tables and were playing, laughing with each other. Brought out the guitars, singing with each other. The kids were out playing with each other. And it was like life again, until the power went out. And everyone went back in home and started looking at their screens. Yeah. So, a good bit of advice is limit your media exposure. I know that probably none of us can do without it entirely. But there's a lot that you can do without. And what you replace it with is real connection to other people, to the world around you. You know, instead of coming home and switching on the TV, do people still look at TVs? Or do they look at their computer now? Anyway, instead of coming home and pressing a button and looking at a screen to check on the weather, go outside and check on the weather. Take the time to do those things that really nourish you. And nourish whatever your experience here brought you. Everybody knows what that is for you. It's different for different people. But take the time to do that. Those are the things that really count. And that will also help keep Mr. Mischief at bay. Mr. Mischief wants us to feel isolated and cold and distant from each other and from the world around us. In the Reader's Digest one time, I read the saying, which I think is very true, that on their deathbed, nobody says to themselves, "I sure wish I spent more time at the office."
Unless you were fucking your secretary.
And community. So essential to you know, keeping that heart fire burning bright. Especially community or interaction of this kind. So there's lots of ways to do that, but again, I want to recommend to everybody here, if you live anywhere within reach of a sacred fire hearth, where people gather at least once a month around the fire, make offerings, and share. A way of taking this fire with you, or coming back to it. And that Sacred Fire community has a lot of other wonderful offerings. Like women's retreats and men's retreats. Initiations into adulthood for young women and men. Working with birthing, working with death and dying. And there's this place, which is here for you. It's a great place to come back to. And continue the kind of discovery and exploration and enrichment that you're experiencing here.